Welcome to Magic 8 Ball with Melissa and Michaela. I'm Melissa Withers, Managing Partner of RevUp Capital.
And I'm Michaela Camp, Director of Platform of RevUp.
And today we are talking about inflation and its impact on early stage companies, a topic that I'm convinced really no one other than me cares about. Why are we not talking more about inflation,
Michaela? We should be.
Bitching about inflation was something that boomers used to do, but unless you're outrageously wealthy or under the age of 20, inflation has changed how you live since 2021. And while we hear a lot about inflation and its impact on consumers, we haven't talked much about its impact on early stage companies, yet it's changed everything about building a business. It's really driving a rethinking of every aspect of how you start and grow a company. But weirdly, it doesn't seem to be a topic of conversation. You won't find it on the agenda at most of the conferences that we go to. And it's not something that I hear investors and advisors talking about nearly enough. Salaries have risen 40 to 60%. You know, airfares doubled in a single year. And then cash constraints that are facing large enterprises are trickling down to the startups you sell to them. Today, it's not uncommon for an enterprise organization that has hundreds of million dollars in revenue to ask an early stage company that has less than $1 million in revenue to give them 60-day terms. And there's some really stunning statistics to show that more than 30% of these organizations are taking up to 90 days to pay. So essentially, they're not even paying when they're supposed to. And so for many early stage companies, this kind of inflation has been a doomsday bear hug, you know, making some common startup fundamentals laughably impractical, and some of them just downright dangerous. You know, it's also made basic blocking and tackling a major cost driver, which siphons resources away from experimentation and growth. And yeah, I just don't know why we're not talking more about it. So today we are. You know, Michaela, in your work with companies, there's a huge emphasis on experimentation as a way to make better decisions, and certainly to make decisions before heavily investing into scale. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've found that treating most decisions like an experiment isn't just helpful, it's essential to companies of this stage. It's about giving yourself the permission to test, learn, and adjust rather than feeling a pressure to get everything perfect on attempt number one. When I work with companies, I encourage them to take this experimental mindset based on the scientific method into their decision making. For example, before you invest heavily into scaling a strategy, we ask the question, what's the smallest, simplest version of this idea that we can test? This turns the decision into a quest to find early indicators of success or uncovering what might not work without committing all your resources up front. What's been fascinating, though, is how this approach not only reduces risk for our portfolio, but it also sparks creativity amongst their team. Teams feel more empowered to try new things because they know it's okay to learn from what doesn't go as planned. Mm. Because most everything turns into a learning moment, the insights you gain from these smaller tests lead to smarter and more impactful scaling decisions based on that data. And at the heart of it, this is really about building a culture where adaptability is celebrated and growth becomes a result of thoughtful, iterative progress, not just a leap of blind faith, which we've seen so often. But one thing I've noticed, even when borrowing the scientific method as a founder, there's some decisions where experimentation just doesn't work at all with inflation, right?
Yeah, I see what you mean about experimentation gives people permission to fail because you can structure an experiment so that the costs of failure are not catastrophic, right? Where if you're just pulling levers and executing at full throttle, you could really get yourself into trouble. But inflation has really eviscerated some pantry staples of entrepreneurial advice. Take hiring for sales. For years, investors in particular, but advisors as well, would tell early stage companies to hire multiple people. And then after a few months, you would keep whoever works out best. It was a reasonable strategy given how often people who look good on paper don't look as good in real life. But today, that little six-month experiment might cost $150,000 more than it did 3 or 4 years ago. And that's like a lot of cheese. And many companies can't tolerate that risk.
Absolutely.
I think ditto with founder compensation. You know, investors and advisors have long advocated for artificially low amounts of founder compensation, ostensibly as a way to keep them aligned with investors and to drive them to get to a good finish. You know, put aside the wisdom, fairness, or effectiveness of that strategy. But the reality is that founder compensation, already meager by any standard, has not risen with inflation. So founders are racking up personal debt. They're not able to pay their rent. They're not able to create any kind of financial stability for themselves, which in the end really really adversely affects company outcomes. And so all of this is contributing to founder burnout, poor leadership environments. And in the end, by not paying founders more, we're actually costing ourselves more by having more failed companies. And this is especially punishing for founders who can't supplement their income with savings or contributions from family members or domestic partners. So right now, entrepreneurship heavily favors those who have, or at least did have at one time, some level of personal wealth. So 2024 really smashed this home for me like a cast iron frying pan. And I'm still somewhat devastated by how little we're talking about this as a key driver of underpinning success inside entrepreneurial communities.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I know a lot of our companies have heard that advice that innovation trumps optimization, but the rising costs of must have changed this perspective for founders, right?
Yeah. So with the rising costs of everything, there's a real and necessary pressure to get awesome at operational efficiency at much earlier stages of company development. You know, some of the best founders I've ever worked with were not great at operational efficiency on day one, right? They were good at other things, things that we have to agree are very important, good at innovating, good at meeting customer needs, good at thinking about what's right over the horizon versus what's right in front of them. And 5 years ago, I didn't need you to be great at operational efficiency. We had some time to get there. Sure, being capital efficient mattered, not burning money in a barrel. But today, when maybe hitting a trade show might cost a company 15 grand, you know, the little things really start to matter. So these founders are under pressure to innovate, evolve, capture market share. And now they also have to be bean counters, right? Really paying attention to every expense and making sure that they're getting the maximum value out of every move they make. And that's a really tall order.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a huge shift for founders. Like, the cost of failing has gotten so much higher, and it's easy to see why some founders feel like they can't afford to experiment at all. There's this pressure to get it right the first time, which we've talked a little bit about, which that ultimately makes experimentation feel risky instead of valuable. And with funding becoming more competitive and Hail Mary money drying up across like everywhere, there's just less room for those big swim for the fences bets that most companies used to be able to take easily.
Yep.
Not to mention, when the funding is available, it comes with so many strings that it just feels too scary to even accept.
Yep.
And I know that pressure and is really pushing founders to find ways to mitigate risk while also enabling growth, because that's how they stay alive. Do you think AI is stepping into that role to help at all with its unlimited access to efficiency?
Yeah, I think it's like a little bit of a silver lining to a very dark, scary inflationary cloud. Like 100%. I think, you know, for many reasons, but certainly as a response to inflation, every company needs an AI strategy to survive. If you're not using AI to automate, expand, and replace higher cost labor, someone else is, and you're competing against that someone else, right? I've got a buddy with a visual data company that's just starting to have contact with their customer. And a few months ago, they created a growth engineer large learning model. And yeah, it took a little while to create, and it's certainly gotten a lot better with training. But this AI resource is now like a full-time team member. And the way that they use it, in many ways, he talks about how it's the first team member often assigned to any new idea, because it can do research. It can do research with valid source citations. It can translate technical product features into business benefits. It crafts messaging for demand generating campaigns. And it supports the human team in these tactical things like, you know, mapping out client pain points. And it's shockingly concise and correct. You know, projects that used to take days, you know, are now being done in hours. They estimate that this tool is doing the work, making the contribution of two full-time employees, literally saving them hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, right? And so this is a really good example. And these are not AI experts or nerds, right? These are two non-technical founders that were able to build this themselves like over a weekend, right? And it's been a game changer.
So. That's crazy.
Yeah. So at least we ended on a high note, which I don't do a lot. I'm like the Debbie Downer of entrepreneurship sometimes, like sad trombone. But, it, you know, as is in keeping with this podcast, Magic 8, Michaela, 2024 has taught us that logic, reason, and history are useless in guiding human decision making. And really, at the end of the day, all we can do is ask the Magic 8 Ball. So I think it's time to bring it home. So
shall we, friend? So Magic 8 Ball.
Let's figure it out.
Will inflation decline in 2024?
2025.
I'm sorry. My sources say no. So not only not in 2024, but not in 2025 either. So Magic 8-Ball has spoken.
Has spoken. And it pretty much means that we should be talking a lot more about inflation.
And we will talk about it a lot more.
So, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.